The Blast from Our Past Network.
Cartwright! Cartwright!
Hello, Newman. This is so f***ing good!
Nothing for you!
These pretzels are making me thirsty!
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Serenity now!
He's a re-gifter!
Well, let's start the insanity.
Giddy up.
Welcome to Cartwright, a Seinfeld podcast. We are two superfans going through, well, we've already gone through every single episode of Seinfeld, and now we're doing some extra stuff for you, and today we have got a topical release, something that just came out on Netflix from May 3rd, 2024. We're going to talk Unfrosted. I'm Adam.
I'm Corey. And boy, am I excited to be talking about this.
Yes, sir. So we haven't really seen Jerry Seinfeld in a hot minute. And this came about, you know, maybe a month or two ago, I found out about it, that this film is directed and stars and produced.
And written by.
And written by Jerry Seinfeld. And it's like, well, you know what? It just made sense for two guys who are so deep in the Seinfeld world that we have to also add this to our bonus content.
Yeah, and it's funny because, I mean, it's not like there's a bunch of Jerry Seinfeld movies for us to review. He's only ever done, like, the B movie and then this.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, funny enough, so we did mention that Seinfeld directed this movie. This was his first feature film that he directed. He did a couple comedy specials
for
Colin Quinn and a couple other random things. But you mentioned the B-movie, and this movie was written by Jerry Seinfeld, Spike Feuerstein, Andy Robin, and Barry Marder, who are all Jerry's writing partners on the B-movie.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much the exact same writing team. And, you know, they also, some of them worked on Seinfeld and some other comedy shows or talk shows or stuff like that, too. So, I mean, I will throw it out there. I've never seen the B-movie.
I saw it once.
I know the memes. I've seen. Okay.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I remember enjoying it, but not like, you know, this is something I need to revisit constantly. But like, it was kiddie and everything, but it still had some moments that, you know, some Seinfeldian moments that I enjoyed.
Okay. Like, what's the deal with Honeycomb?
I think they did something like that, you know. But yeah, But this, on the other hand, when I saw the trailer for it, I was like, oh, this is kind of, for me, this is like right up my alley. Because I love movies like A Futile and Stupid Gesture. Have you ever seen that?
I don't know that one.
It's with Will Forte, and it's kind of like the how National Lampoon started, the main guy and like his other people. But it's like, it's that whole like, it's comedy, it's based on sort of real stuff, but not everything is real in it, you know? And I like these kind of films.
I equated a lot of this film, and I'll probably mention it multiple times, to Weird, the Weird Al story that came out on Roku.
I still want to see that.
I loved that movie.
Okay.
And so I tried to come in with an open mind, because I really had no idea. I thought this was going to be like a more of a, at first, before I like saw the trailer, when I heard about it, oh, they're telling about Pop-Tarts. That's kind of telling the story about how Pop-Tarts came to be. And I was like, okay, this is going to be almost like a dramedy, you know, almost, you know, play on. It's going to have some comedic moments, of course. You got comedic moments, so you can, because you have Jerry Seinfeld, et cetera, et cetera. But it'll be mostly realism. Certainly not the case, and we'll talk more about that.
180, a complete 180 from what you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, so. All right, I want to go through some of the cast and crew before we kind of get further into things. Well, you know what? I take that back. You know what I want to do? I want to drink some fucking whiskey.
There you go.
Welcome to Adam's Quickie Whiskey Corner.
So this is kind of, guys and gals, if you've listened to Cartwright of Seinfeld podcast, we have a certain way of doing things. But over on our Patreon page, Adam and I are, well, we're almost done with Curb. We've actually gone through the entire series, sometimes, much to our chagrin, but we have fun with it. But one thing that we've done differently on Curb, on our Curb reviews, is Adam does a quickie whiskey review, and I've started doing them as well with him. And Adam will kind of give a little back history on the whiskey that we're talking about, or that we're drinking, and everything. But this time, I have actually sent the whiskey to Adam. Mm-hmm. He actually has a couple different ones, and some of them we're going to save for the Curb series wrap-up. Like I said, we're almost done, so go check out our Patreon page for every single episode of Cartwright Seinfeld Podcast and every single episode of Cartwright Presents Curb Your Enthusiasm Podcast.
Or if you hate Curb, just listen to our whiskey portions, and then, you know, then if you love whiskey, then you can talk about that.
Exactly. So I'll kind of just give a little backstory on what we're drinking right now. It's called Silent Rock Vanilla Cream Whiskey. This was kind of like, I sent two bottles to Adam, but I was like, or, you know, two samples from other whiskeys. And I was like, I had nothing else around the house to kind of like send him something else. I was like, you know what? Let me just send this. And it's a liqueur, obviously. Yeah. But
I have to say, it does frustrate me when places like things like Fireball do the same thing. They say cinnamon whiskey. No, you're a cinnamon whiskey liqueur.
Yeah.
Maybe you try to have flavors of whiskey, but you're a liqueur. That is a liqueur.
Exactly. And I kind of just sent it to him, you know, thinking he was just going to enjoy it on his own. But we kind of both felt that this was perfect for the Unfrosted movie, you know?
It's a parody of a whiskey, but it's also kind of something sweet and kind of different.
Exactly.
It fits well.
So I'll just give you a little backstory. I actually picked this up in Silverton. It's like locally brewed up here in, or locally made.
Good looking bottle.
Yeah, it's not bad. Up here in Oregon. And I'll say, I'll read the back, because Adam reads the back of his usually, and I'll read this one. Vanilla whiskey cream liqueur is the exquisite clash of two worlds, that of smooth 503 whiskey and rich vanilla cream. Try it on the rocks, with some coffee, or with anything that deserves a little something extra. Shake it up and enjoy. Oh, did you shake yours?
I did. I shook it up, and I kind of stirring as well.
So Myra and I, last Christmas, we went to this little town called Silverton, and that it's just this cute little town that has this little light thing, and we stayed in this, like, you know, like a ski lodge type of environment, you know, and they had a tasting there of this whiskey with some other things as well. I think they were all from the 503 distillery or something like that. So I was like, oh, cool. And so I took a little drink of it, I tasted. I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. It tastes pretty good. And we were kind of sitting at a table talking to this older couple, and they were really cool. My wife and I were just kind of talking to them, killing some time and everything, waiting for our food to come. And, you know, we were kind of both, all four of us were agreeing that we enjoyed this whiskey liqueur. It was fun. So I went up to go buy a bottle, and they were only like $25, $30 maybe. I was like, you know what? It's Christmas. I'm going to buy a bottle for this other couple that we just met. So I came back over. I gave it to him. Let me tell you, the guy was like, oh my God. Oh my God. I've never seen someone freak out so much by someone giving them something. I was like, no, it's all good, man. It's Christmas, you know, spread the love and everything. Myra and I went to dinner, came back around, we bumped into them again, and the guy again was like, I can't believe it. Like, I can't believe you bought that for me. So nice. And the wife was like, yeah, he's the sheriff of the town. And, you know, and I'm just like, oh, I put it all. No one ever does anything nice for the sheriff.
Yeah,
like,
nobody likes him.
Yeah, no, everyone's interactions are usually probably negative, but he was like, oh my God. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know, but I was like, hey, nice to meet you, sheriff. And he was like, oh, thank you so much. And I just was like, well, I guess I can get out of any speeding ticket in Silverton now, you know?
There you go.
But it was a nice thing, and I enjoyed it. It was a great moment, and it was just kind of nice doing something nice for somebody. It made my dead, cold, dead heart grow two times that day. But yeah, so I mean, like, I'll come out right and say it. I'm not the biggest like liqueur fan or anything like that, but I thought this was something fun and different to have in my, you know, meager library of whiskeys and everything. So Adam, sure. You got your nose in there. Cheers. Do you smell anything other than cream?
I don't really even get much vanilla on the nose, but I get like slight alcohol and mostly milk or cream.
Yeah,
that's it.
Me too, buddy. That's what I get as well. I do get a little bit of vanilla, but I think it's probably just because I love vanilla, but yeah, I can smell a little bit. But, you know, let's give it a shot.
That goes down easy.
It sure does.
Yeah.
Tastes pretty much like any other, you know, whiskey liqueur out there.
Yeah.
You know what, Jameson Irish cream, basically.
Yeah, Buffalo Trace has a bourbon cream. I got a couple of them down in this area. I don't usually go for them because I just drink my bourbon neat. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think this would go well On the rocks, particularly. I think just throw a rock on there and that'd be very nice. This would work really well. I'm not a coffee guy, but like, this would work well with coffee.
Yeah,
like,
give it a little bit of a something extra to it.
Or do, you know, kind of make like a you know, White Russian kind of thing, but use this, and that would work well, even like substituting the Baileys or whatnot. Yeah, this is decent. I mean, this is easy to drink, sweet, simple.
Yeah,
but yeah.
But yeah, definitely tasty. And like I said, I mean, I can't remember the last time I've had like Bailey's, you know, by itself. But I got to say, I think this one probably has a little bit more of a vanilla flavor than that. Like the whiskey flavor is very low on this one.
Yeah, whiskey's low. It's got more vanilla flavor than like, yeah, like a Bailey's or whatnot. But yeah, I mean, it is cream heavy. It's like you're drinking some milk with some alcohol, and here's a hint of vanilla for you.
Perfect. Absolutely. Yeah, perfect. So, guys and gals, if you're up here in the Pacific Northwest ever and you're, you know, looking for something like this, then, you know, check out, Silent Rock Vanilla Whiskey Cream. So, there you go.
A less thick eggnog.
Yeah, without, basically. Yeah.
And I'm not thinner, a little easier to drink.
Yeah, agreed. Very much enjoy it. I'll probably take me forever to go through this, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. But right. Did we enjoy Unfrosted?
Well, I can tell you a lot of the reviews. It's tough to get away from the reviews from some of the, like, I'm in some Seinfeld Facebook groups and whatnot. The majority of people didn't like it,
really?
From what I saw. Yeah. So okay. We'll see as we discuss. But I want to start off talking a little bit about the cast and crew. So as I already mentioned, who directed it, who wrote it, music, I want to say, was by Christoph Beck, who had already done some music for Buffy, the show, and Angel, all of the Hangover movies, both Frozen movies, Edge of Tomorrow, Trolls, and the Roadhouse remake right before this one that came out. So, yeah, pretty well there. But talk about overqualified. It didn't show in the movie, in my opinion. They really kind of went about saturated colors and stuff like that. They didn't show off the skills of the cinematographer, who is Bill Pope. Pope. So Bill Pope shot Army of Darkness, The Matrix Trilogy, Spider-Man 2, Team America. Now, I'll tell you, Team America, you have to be kind of unique to film a whole movie with puppets.
Yeah, exactly.
Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
Wow.
The live-action Jungle Book. Shang-Chi was his as well. Some phenomenal visual effects and stunning
things. Oh, he did a Baby Driver as well.
Yes, Baby Driver is great. Action stuff. Like, this guy knows how to shoot interesting and action-y kind of movies, and none of that was used for Unfrosted.
No, it wasn't. Although, I mean, they did a great job of sort of capturing this. I mean, it's not real. Like, this is like sort of like a fantasy world, you know, where cereal is king and everything, and it was for a lot of kids, but, you know, it does, you mentioned it did have this, like, it has this, like, oversaturated look. There's, like, no shadows anywhere. Everything is very vibrant and colorful, but, you know, I do think that there is some hidden, you know, CGI and effects in it that maybe that's, like, something that he was better at, and they might have chosen him for those reasons, because he can kind of, like, also maybe visualize the effects and everything in his head.
Definitely some blue screen. There's the ravioli we'll talk about that, obviously.
I love the little rat. I forgot what was his name, Chuck or something like that. I forgot what they named him, but yeah.
You loved it? Are you fucking kidding me?
Buddy, I'm going to be nothing but smiles this entire episode.
Wow. I mean, well, you know what? It fits with our Seinfeld stuff, because you always like the more wacky, and I did not with Seinfeld.
And this movie is wacky.
This is a fucking Mr. Marble style episode for everybody. Mm-hmm.
All right. This is more Mr. Marbles, less, you know, something else.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk the cast. So Bob Cabana, who is an employee of Kellogg's, loosely based on William Post, is played by Jerry Seinfeld, who you, of course, know from Seinfeld, the B-movie, Comedians in Cars, Getting Coffee. He's Jerry Seinfeld. Donna Stankowski, who is a NASA scientist who joins the Kellogg's team and used to work with Bob Cabana back in the day, is played by Melissa McCarthy. Bridesmaids, Spy, Ghostbusters, the Little Mermaid live action reboot that they did.
Yeah, everything.
Edsel Kellogg III, who is the head of Kellogg's and Bob's boss, is played by Jim Gaffigan, who is a stand-up legend.
Jim Gaffigan looking heavy, man.
I mean, you know what? He talks about how he loves food and stuff, and I get it. I'm looking like Jim Gaffigan. I'm just not as tall as Jim Gaffigan. I'm just not as rich as Jim Gaffigan. I'm just not as talented as Jim Gaffigan.
You know who is looking pretty good, though, still, is Christian Slater.
Yeah, his face looks a little fake. He looks like he put on a mask, a Christian Slater mask, to play this role. Yeah, Christian Slater is playing one of the milk guys. He works for like the milk conglomerate.
Like Big Milk, yeah.
Yeah, Big Milk. Let's see here.
Hugh Grant?
Yeah, I'm getting there, bro.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
That's all right. I'm sorry. Don't tell me how to podcast, Corey. Rick Ludwin is an employee of Post. Max Greenfield, a smaller role. He was in New Girl, Big Short, The Neighborhood. Thurl Ravenscroft, as you said, is played by Hugh Grant. Thurl Ravenscroft is a real person. Oh. He was the voice of Tony the Tiger.
Oh, wow.
Now, he was not the person in the suit or whatnot.
Yeah,
Tony the Tiger was always like a cartoon.
Yeah.
But he is, they're great. Like, that is Thurl Ravenscroft. He also is the singing voice. You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. That is Thurl Ravenscroft. He's not the narrator of that movie, but he is the he is the voice behind that song. Marjorie Post, who is the head of the rival cereal post company Post, is Amy Schumer. I can't talk to that. I mean, a little bit of vanilla whiskey cream, and now I'm stuck. My mouth is all stuck. Amy Schumer played Marjorie Post. She's a stand-up. Inside Amy Schumer, some movies, Trainwreck and Snatched.
Yeah, and more famously, she's one of my three famous alumni from my college.
Wow, like Elaine Bennis.
Exactly. Well, no.
Well, she's from Baltimore.
Yes, yes. So yeah, Amy Schumer. I forgot the other guy. Glover. He was the mad scientist in Gremlins 2. And he was also in Batman and Robin as the guy who made...
He's a Glover?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he does kind of look like Crispin Glover. Are they related?
I don't think...
But I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh, no, yeah.
I'm thinking
of the news guy. I'm thinking of the news guy. He looks like...
Okay. And then Mike Flanagan, director of House on Haunted Hill, Dr. Sleep, and everything. So those are our three famous ones.
Well, UGA, whenever you say that, I have to mention Wayne Knight.
Yes.
Went to UGA, bro.
Yeah, and that's wins. A good one. That's a good one.
All right. And then we also have like Ryan Seacrest.
Sure. Sure.
All right. Harry Friendly, who is the leader of the milk syndicate, who is kind of like the guy behind Christian Slater, is played by Peter Dinklage. You know him from Game of Thrones, X-Men Days of Future Past, Death at a Funeral, et cetera, et cetera. And now I'm not going to go on more about the other, like, each role, but I'm going to say the slew of cameos, the slew of people in this movie is absurd. Tell me who I miss. Bill Burr, Dan Levy, Thomas Lennon, Tony Hale, Dean Norris, John Hamm. Cedric the Entertainer, Fred Armisen, Andy Daly, Patrick Warburton, Putty made appearance.
Yeah.
And even Jessica Seinfeld, Jerry's wife, appeared in the movie as well.
Oh, who was she?
She was Danielle Sklar. I cannot remember the character, but I just thought it was interesting that he, you know, a little nepotism, got his wife in there. Daryl Hammond as well. He played Ed McMahon. Yeah,
cool. The guy that played Walter Cronkite was fantastic.
It was the guy who played Cronkite was the same guy who played Johnny Carson. Like he must do like impressions because he was spot on with Cronkite.
Both of them I thought were like AI.
They
like,
might have done face swaps.
I don't know, man. It was holy fucking shit. He was great. And then like Mikey Day, like the whole Snap, Crackle, and Pop group. I don't watch SNL anymore. But the only reason I know of Mikey Day now is because of that famous Beavis and Butthead thing they just did.
That blew up.
Yeah, that blew up. But so one of my notes here is it was almost distracting how every single role in this movie is by somebody. Like, there's no, like, virtually no role in this movie that is by a nobody, you know?
I agree with that. It did kind of, it pulled me out of it a bit. It's just like, oh, wait, holy shit, that's that person.
Right. You know?
So
yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, but there's so many people in it that are just fantastic in their own right.
To set up a little bit about the premise of the film, or at least, like, how it came to be, I'll say. Apparently, in an interview, Jerry Seinfeld said that himself and Spike Ferriston, as a joke, would say to each other, let's make a movie about Pop-Tarts. And Seinfeld said when the pandemic happened, they had nothing to do. And so that's when they wrote it, because they literally had nothing. And so it was like a joke that they used to say. And then they just made it happen because fucking COVID.
Why not? You know, and as much as we, you know about Jerry Seinfeld, and a lot of it is through the TV show Seinfeld, he loves cereal. And this just felt like a perfect vehicle for Jerry Seinfeld to do something with. You know, it has all the cereal love in it, and it has, sure, like just that era, the 60s, because I think that's when pretty much he grew up in the 60s, yeah, or, you know, late 60s, obviously. I think he was probably born in 68 or something like that. But it's like, it's all of this like era that's like Americana, you know, and in Seinfeld, you know, we've had a lot of references to Americana on Seinfeld, like, you know, Bazooka Joe and things like that. But they're always sort of twisted and have a different, like, sort of spin on them. So I thought that this was kind of like a, like I said, the perfect vehicle for him to sort of spin things in the Jerry Seinfeld sort of way.
Did you notice in that very first, like, scene, maybe the first shot, let alone, that kid who was, like, sneaking away, who was running away, like in that old style, he put his stuff in a napkin. He put like Bazooka Joe bubblegum and like, you know, other kind of crap like that, you know, old school stuff. I will throw out, it had me a little bothered and been like, what fucking year is this movie set in? Because this kid is running away and dressed like he's from the fucking 50s. But then we see Jerry, who is looking modern, and we flash back to the fucking like 60s. What the hell was that?
Yeah, I know. I kind of took it as it's kind of timeless. Like, his outfit, Jerry's, looked a little bit more early 70s to me, but fashion with what it is kind of looks contemporary now, because
it looked good. Just now.
It looks really, actually, some of the outfits he wears in it looks great, but this is supposed to take place in the 60s, but it's this weird dreamlike thing where nothing's real anyways. You know, like, I don't, like, was the Post and Kellogg's, are they both from the same small town, Battle Creek?
I don't think
like
so.
Michigan or something like that, you know? But that's the thing, like, I don't know what is real and what isn't real in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of play with a lot of stuff, and I mean, they take a lot of liberties to what is true or not. I mean, I assume most everything other than Kellogg's Pop-Tarts and Post also makes cereal is basically everything else is kind of fake.
Yeah. But yeah, well, apparently, the lady head of that Marjorie Post or whatever, I think she was a real person.
A real person.
And they kind of did this nice little tribute to her at the end, but I kind of took it as, out of all the main characters, she was probably the only fully actual real person that they kind of, like, you know, were talking, because like you said, Jerry Seinfeld's character didn't exist, like that name, he doesn't exist, and everything. So, you know, I think maybe she was the only one they sort of latched onto as a real person.
Yeah, that could have been the Kellogg guy, could have been the legit name as well, but like, besides that, you know, no big deal. And it was interesting when they added that she actually is known for Mar-a-Lago.
He was like, this is real. They actually put in parentheses, like, this is real.
Yeah. I saw a quote from Jerry Seinfeld I thought was kind of interesting. He said his favorite Pop-Tart is brown sugar cinnamon. I'm pretty much right there as well. He said, toasted. To be clear, I do not like Pop-Tarts untoasted. The flavors come together in the toaster. There's something sad about a cold Pop-Tart. It's soulless. It's devoid of emotion. Incomplete. So, I mean, I can eat them hot or cold. I don't care. You give this fat boy all the Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, no. Well, since you mentioned your favorite, I always like the strawberry with the frosting and the sprinkles on it.
Okay.
I did like the line in here where he's like, all the flavors are the same, we just changed the color.
Yeah, it's just pretty possible.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I will say, knowing kind of the parody side of it, I tried to go in with a pretty open mind because how much I enjoyed Weird Al movie, how much I enjoyed like Airplane or stuff like that. This has it had a lot of farcical moments to me that felt almost Airplane like they were diving into the parody aspect, just hey, this is real life, kind of happened, but here is a bunch of wackiness as well,
like the IBM computer. And I like when they unveil them, the IBM computer, like, it sees everyone's date and it knows when people are gonna die, and that one guy, it's like, dies now, and he's like, oh, he dies. This movie was
Airplane.
this movie is more akin to Naked Gun and Airplane than it is to, like, an actual period piece, like, say, I don't know, Mad Men.
Nice little cameos from John Hamm and the other guy as well.
Slatterly or whatever. Yeah. And I love the fact that they were actually playing, like, them. You know, they're...
That was a nice little callback. You know, them doing cameos of those characters was nice.
Because I was telling my wife early on, I was like, I was like, this is like Mad Men, but like as a comedy and completely, you know, farcical. And then having them come at the very end of the movie, it's like, you guys knew what you were doing here.
Oh, yeah. The basic plot of this film, as it's kind of said, in this tale of ambition, betrayal, sugar, and menacing milkmen, cereal companies Kellogg's attempts to beat their rival Post to the market with a revolutionary breakfast pastry in 1963, Battle Creek, Michigan. That's the very basics, but then there's a whole bunch of other storylines in here. There's forbidden love. There's sentient life.
Moon landings.
Moon landings. Yes, exactly. Mafia milkmen.
Sentient life.
Yeah. The creation. Yeah, exactly.
Russian subplot. The Cuban Missile Crisis is actually about sugar.
We kind of mentioned it. You already brought it up, but like, what a throwback to just nostalgia and particularly advertising and like food in particular. So many callbacks to like old cartoon or old commercials or slogans or just, hey, I mean, very Seinfeld, you know, that we talk like, hey, you remember Bazooka Joe or other stuff like that. There were tons of these references.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of crazy.
Yeah, it was chock full of them. I kind of like the fact that, like, you know, when we see Tony the Tiger in this, it's not the new Tony the Tiger. It's the design from the 60s. And I thought that was really cool. And, you know, Snap, Crackle, and Pop is in it. They make, you know, references to, like, what are they? Rice Krispie Treats, how they were made in a dumpster type of thing. Like,
oh, my God. Those Dumpster Kids can fuck off. That was a terrible addition. I hated the Dumpster Kids.
That was probably my least favorite part of the movie. I understood what they were trying to go for with them.
I didn't tell me.
But it just, I thought the kids were too much. They were just like way too much.
A director has to, with kids, kids are not as practiced, obviously, when it comes to acting. And those kids in particular were like hamming it up. I always wanted to be like, whoa, ratchet it down a notch, kids. Like, this is not, you know, stage theater. You have to kind of pull it. And they were just like, they were too much for me. I couldn't stand them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I wasn't a big fan of them either. That was probably my least favorite part of the entire movie was them. But they are, you know, they kind of do drive the plot forward in a couple points, unfortunately.
Oh,
you remove them, you know, from the script.
You're right. I mean, you cut them out and then Bob finds, you know, the goo and the stuff on his own in the trash. He doesn't
find
these
kids there.
But something else, you know. I will throw out a fun little Seinfeld reference where they were talking about how to keep like a jelly or fruit shelf stable. That was one of the things that they had trouble.
Yeah.
And it was like, maybe it's the xanthan gum. And he goes, xanthan. Like, just like Newman. And I was like, Newman.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I got that one.
Yep. No, I noticed that one too. I thought that was a lot of fun.
My next note, I can't understand. Now, we have our differences. You like the magical, I do not as much. The sentient sea monkey ravioli was the fucking stupidest thing in the movie other than the dumpster diving kids. How did you like that? Why would you think this was, like, they were coming up with all these, they brought in a whole, like, kind of group, you know, of these, like, specialists from different fields, and two of them together created this fucking ravioli, and how did you think it was funny?
Because you didn't see it coming. It was great. I loved it. And, well, it's also, what is it, John Lennon? Is that his name? Bill Lennon? The guy from Reno 911.
Oh, Thomas Lennon.
Thomas Lennon, yeah. He was the one, like, I liked how he played, like, Werner von Braun type of thing and, like, kind of character. Some guy from Nazi Germany and everything. But they mixed with Chef Boyardee. They mixed the fucking sea monkeys together. They created life. It's great. If it wasn't in there, it wouldn't take anything away, but it would give them less to do. And I don't know. Yeah. I thought it was... sometimes comedy can just be something stupid happening. I mean, in this movie, what, Thomas Schwinn, Johnny Schwinn, the guy played by, what's his name from 30
yeah,
Rock, gets
Jack,
blown
Jack,
up.
Jack McBriar.
Yeah, yeah, he gets fucking blown up. He gets killed. And then the funeral is so preposterous that it's great. Yes. This is farcical. This is all farce.
It's
like Naked Gun. It's like fucking, Airplane with the autopilot as a blow-up guy, you know?
Yeah, but that stuff was smarter. I felt like, now, Naked Gun, no, and I don't like a lot of some of the other stuff. Like, a lot of the overt, like, Leslie Nielsen stuff I don't care for. Airplane was good. Airplane was funny. It had a lot of, like, I think, intelligence to it, where this one just had a lot of dumb to it, man.
What, this one right here?
Yeah, this movie.
Or naked, not Naked Gun, right? This, Unfrosted.
Oh, and I mean, Naked Gun had plenty of dumb, too. and in some of, like, Mel Brooks's, like, later stuff, it was just like, they lost their intelligence, and they just kind of dived into the fucking farce, and that's not where it was good. You had to have a nice mix.
I don't know, buddy. I don't know what to tell you. I love the fucking creating life, man.
Wow. I want to comment that the guy who played the Tom Carvel, I can't remember. Every time I saw him, I'm like, why are you not Wayne Knight? Like, why the fuck are you literally... Wayne Knight could have done your job, and I would have loved to see that cameo.
Well, when they were referring to now it wasn't Gorbachev, it was the other Russian president before him. When they referred to him as being like
Boris Yeltsin or something,
being a bald little demented guy or something like that, I was like, oh, Jason Alexander, and then it's not. Right. Yeah, he didn't use any of his Seinfeld alumni
just
in this.
Patrick Warburton for one short scene.
Right. That's yeah. It. But I meant like the core group. Yeah. And I wonder if that was like by choice. Did you think he was like, you know what, it'll take people out of it? I don't know.
Yeah. It takes me as much out of it to see Peter Dinklage as this milk mafia guy.
Right.
To see any of these other people in
Christian
these roles.
The Christian Slater mask as Christian Slater playing a milkman.
I mean, any of that was the exact same. Yeah. Like, I mean, but I would have been like, oh, the Seinfeld gang. Yeah. And you know what I would have loved them to do? Let them fucking hug. That would have been funny to me. Yeah. I don't know. Just something. Anything. Now, you don't need that, but I would have liked it. I mean...
I would have too. I would have actually enjoyed that as well. I was waiting for it. I was waiting for at least Jason Alexander to pop up.
Yes.
I wasn't really expecting like Michael Richards, but you know, I was hoping.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Yeah. Absolutely would have been nice. So I also, other scenes that I have problems with, the dairy torture scene where, you know, they get him
the aisle
or whatever it was. Yeah. I thought that was dumb, but I felt very
great.
It felt very Jerry Seinfeld, as in like Seinfeld from the Seinfeld show, because he was like, oh, he had to go immediately to the shower. He was unclean, like all this stuff.
His wife was like, I'm sure you're clean. He's like, but what about my mind? How do I clean my mind?
they're just cows.
They're Why farts. They were farts.
They're farts. Yeah.
A whole row of them, like 100 farts right in your face. Oh, this movie's perfect, guys. Guys and gals, it's perfect.
I feel like just the contentious. I'm rising. Your score is rising just to spite me.
Yes,
right now.
I have spite rising.
God damn it.
And
I
love
not good.
Max Greenfield fucking eating the poison cereal and then his nose starts bleeding. I thought that was great. I don't know, man. I love everything that they were doing with this. I love the fucking Milkman Crime Syndicate. I love the fucking a Post and a Kellogg could never be. Uh-huh. But then doesn't that make it sexier? I love that. I loved all of it.
No, that part was not interesting or funny to me.
Bill Burr as JFK was great. Love that.
Yeah. Yeah, he actually, that is one of my comments that I did like. Bill Burr as JFK really were, and all of his like, you know, philandering around with other ladies and stuff like that, and the Double Mint Twins.
Yeah.
I liked that. I thought Bill Burr was great in that role. Most everything else I didn't care for.
Did you like James Marsden as Jack LaLanne?
Yeah, he was fine. I mean, he was playing his very energetic Jack LaLanne style, and I mean, it worked. No, did I need Jacqueline in the fucking movie? No.
No. Sugar is poison. That's why we're developing something new. High fructose corn syrup.
Yes. Which is, that's a clever line.
For me, I think, though, yeah. like we said earlier, for me, the biggest one was Walter Cronkite. That three-part bit and how bad his home life is and how he's kind of like doesn't want to go home. I thought that bit was fantastic.
Fair. That was funny. The mascot strike storyline. Thoughts on that? Was it needed?
No, and also too, it was.
It became
topical.
January 6th.
Yeah, it was too topical. You know, with Hugh Grant becoming like the QAnon shaman. Yeah. I was like, I get what you're doing, and I don't think it's too soon, and I don't think it was in bad taste. It just, no. I didn't really do anything for me. I think that was a worse subplot than the fucking ravioli sea monkey.
I mean, it felt like it came out of nowhere. That's for sure.
Yeah, they were trying to give Hugh Grant something to do.
Yes, I agreed, and it was unnecessary. Like, I didn't care about that. I literally like turned to Keisha, like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" Like when we saw him with the horns and turned into the shaman, I was like, "This is bad."
It literally feels like it wasn't written in because nothing comes from it. Like story wise, it was written after the fact that they got Hugh Grant to play that character. You know what I mean? Like that's what it felt like.
Yeah. Yes, it did. Yeah, they're trying to elevate that character because who cared about it?
Yeah, because nothing. There was no consequence from that whole scene.
No, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, there was really no consequence to any of this fucking movie. Other than laughs and enjoyment. 93 minutes of my life wasted.
Other than 93 minutes that I will gladly take again and do again.
Ugh. Fucking no. All right. And the end of the movie, they had a song, a specific song for them called Sweet Morning Heat that was written and performed by Meghan Trainor and Jimmy Fallon.
That was during
the credits where they did like a, they had credits that played outtakes and they sang over them. They had a whole dance number. It was cringy to me. I am usually a huge fan of kind of like unique credits like that, you know, that either do like the talking credits or something like that that shows this kind of stuff. This one was cringe. Maybe by that time I was so done with the humor that I'm like, I want this to be fucking done.
Well, I mean, by this point I was in love with this movie and trying to buy it on Blu-ray. But I will say that I cringed at Jerry Seinfeld's when he was doing the singing and the dancing. I thought he was terrible.
Awful.
at lip singing and everything. I thought he was absolutely atrocious. He was the one that took me out of that completely.
The absolute best part of this movie was the whiskey I was drinking while I watched it. There's nothing else good.
Trying to get drunk enough
to forget it.
You're actually going down, buddy.
It's not a good movie. It is. I'm sticking to what I put down as my score. Like, it kind of kept creeping down as I was watching it. I was like, okay, maybe this is something. No, this is lower than that. Oh, fuck, no, this is lower than that. Just couldn't. Let me start. We'll try to end on a positive note. How about that? Assuming you're not just faking us out.
Well, no. I want to, before you end it, I do want to ask you, what is your favorite cereal of all time?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Nice. Mine is Fruity Pebbles.
Which is my number two.
Nice.
Fucking fantastic call.
And Cinnamon Toast Crunch is probably my top three. So awesome, buddy. Because I love the way the milk tastes afterwards, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Same with Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah.
Those are like two of the best cereal milks out there.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, so I bought a protein shake. So I was kind of like, I'm getting tired of like the classic vanilla and chocolate kind of protein shakes. So I went online and was looking for different flavors, and they have a Fruity Pebbles protein shake. And other than like kind of some of that synthetic protein shake taste that it's got, it has like a Fruity Pebbles milk taste to it. It's pretty fucking good.
Man, these fucking magicians, you know, making food flavors nowadays are insane. Myra has brought home these vegan bonbons from Trader Joe's. Mm-hmm. They're fucking amazing, and they're fucking vegan.
Yeah, they're basically healthy.
I ate like four of them.
Sugar is still vegan, bro.
Damn it. The beatus. It's coming for me.
The beatus. All right, I'm going to dive into my final thoughts.
Sure.
This did not work for me. Not just this didn't work for me, this really didn't work for me. I kept kind of trying to compare it to the Weird Al story, because they have similar styles. telling those quote-unquote true stories, loosely based, obviously parody, diving into the parody, comedic liberties, all this kind of untrue stuff happening and the goofy humor, all that kind of stuff. But it failed here where it worked for Weird Al, because parody is a brand with Weird Al. The wackiness is a brand with Weird Al. Over the top fits with all of that. I guess I couldn't get past that with Seinfeld to me. I couldn't get past that with Jerry. I couldn't get past any of that. And it just felt over the top and lame. It just felt so fucking lame to me. I also don't think Jerry's acting style worked very well in this movie. I think he was one of the weakest actors here. A lot of the other actors I see in comedic roles do this kind of stuff. Every single one of them pretty much will do these kind of wacky kind of comedies. Jerry Seinfeld doesn't really, and I think it showed. Almost too many cameos. It fucking got distracting. I agree with you on that. There were some humorous moments, and I'm going to throw out there. Bill Burr over-womanizing JFK, that fit with me. Walter Cronkite was solid. There are some other decent moments. That's why those couple moments add up to 1 out of 5 Trat Pops.
Trat Pops. Yeah, baby. Oh, man. This is going to be our biggest point disparity ever.
Well, since the Merv Griffin show.
Yes, yes. This is another Merv Griffin. Wow, but it was so weird because it was reversed on the Merv Griffin where I didn't like the farcical.
But it was so, it's perfect.
Exactly. So I went into this, I honestly went into this not expecting to like it. Mm-hmm. And I adored it. I thought it was amazing. I got, like I said, I got shades of A Futile and Stupid Gesture, got shades of Airplane and stuff like that. I was here for all of it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was a nice extension of things that, like, of Jerry Seinfeldisms all around. And unlike Adam, I actually thought Jerry Seinfeld did a great job in this. I liked his reactions. I liked his deliveries. I thought he did a great job. My biggest problem, I think, is all the cameos. I do think that the cameos and the kids, the two kids and the cameos, the excessive cameos, kind of took me out of it. But some of them were still great. So, like, you know, the Don Draper stuff was great. The Walter Cronkite stuff was great. You know, stuff like, and but I think Bill Burr probably takes the cake as being the best cameo in the whole thing. Even his little outtake was great when at the end he was like, oh, this is a comedy. Not, I was trying to go for a serious role here. Like, I'm sure that was, you know, whatever, but I thought it was still funny. And yeah, overall, I had an absolute blast with this. I think going in with an open mind and open heart, and I give this 4.5 sentient sea monkey raviolis out of 5. Baby, I will watch this again and again and again. Loved it.
Wow.
Yeah, baby.
I was preparing myself for like a 3.5 or a 4.
It was almost
like,
a 5.
I was like, okay,
I was like, I was going to be a 5. But I was like, you know what? Realistically, let's talk realistically here. I can't give it a 5 because I didn't like those kids. So I had to give it 4.5.
Jesus Christ. Your brain, man. Sometimes I think we're in sync, but then nah, you baby. Come and do this shit right here.
Yeah, baby. I'm all about that fun, baby.
Wow. All right. Well, that's a shocker. That is a shocker right there. If you guys are listening to this and you enjoy Corey and my banter, I'm going to highly recommend another plug again to our
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Right,
I'm my brain, like, literally, I cannot fathom that just happened. A 4.5.
4.5. Almost a 5. Almost a week. I would give it a 4.75 if we did that here.
You're so crazy.
I love how much this makes you so upset.
If you like us, go check out our Curb Patreon. We have a good time, even though we don't always enjoy the episodes of Curb. We always enjoy each other.
We do.
And have a good time.
Even when we don't see eye to eye, we always enjoy each other's company. Yeah, even when Adam wants to kill me, I can see it in his eyes right now.
Shocked. Like, that is insane.
He is shook right now.
Yeah.
Well, guys and gals, let us know what you thought of Unfrosted. Do you lean more towards Adam, or do you lean more towards me? And if you want to go back and listen to the Merv Griffin episode, it's very similar to how this one played out as well.
But just opposite.
But it literally the exact opposite of our stances. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
If I could, you know what, Adam? If I could take that Adam with me to the Unfrosted, you know, review... No.
I mean, because it's the same Adam.
Give
that's
me the Merv Griffin Adam.
You got stuck on how he can't fit the shit into his goddamn apartment. That's not the big deal.
Yeah, it's preposterous. Absolutely preposterous.
All right, everybody.
I love you, buddy.
Love you, too. And I love each and every one of you who is listening right now. Consider listening to more of us. And you know what? If not, that's okay, too. We love you anyway.
We love you anyways.
Hey, everybody. I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.